Today's shiur is Masechta Yevamos Daf Pei Gimel. We will begin on Daf Pei Beis Amud Beis, the last words of the Amud. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav, Leisa Masnisa Mekama Braisa. A Mishnah that has Rabbi Yossi holding that androgynous has the din of a Zohar is refuted by the Braisa. That the Braisa holds that Rabbi Yossi does not hold that androgynous is considered definitely a zocher. The Tanya, because we learn in the Braiser, Rabbi Yossi Omer, androgynous barrier b'fnei atzmai, androgynous is to be viewed as an independent barrier, v'lechriba chachamim, over whom Chazal were not able to determine im zochem nekeva. There's a very big machlokes rishonim, how to understand the statement of Rabbi Yossi. Tosfos seems to learn that what the Braiser means to say is that Rabbi Yossi was not able to determine definitively, should we treat androgynous as a zocher, or should we treat him as a nekeva? And that's why he's a suffix. Not to mean, says Tosfos, that there's a new third category called an androgynous. There is no new third category called an androgynous. Rather, he is a suffix. We don't know exactly how to treat him. The Ramban, however, disagrees. And the Rabban explains that what Rabbi Yossi means in the Braisa when he says, V'lechriba chachamim, Chazal were not able to determine if he's a zocher in the keva, means that there's a new category in halacha. There's a zocher, a male, there's a nekeva, a female, and then there's an androgynous, who is not a zocher, not a nekeva, but rather a barrier b'fnei atzma, an entirely new halachic status. Ask the Gemara, Adrabba. So the Gemara is saying we're following the opinion of the Braisa in determining what Rabbi Yossi's opinion is. But ask the Gemara, shouldn't we say, Leisa LeBraisa Mikam Masnisen? Why don't we follow the opinion of the Mishnah? And the way most Mefarshim explained the Gemara's question, the Gemara isn't just asking what makes you say that we should follow the opinion of the Braisa. Maybe we should follow the opinion of the Mishnah. That's not what the Gemara means to say. They say what the Gemara means to say is that we know throughout Shas that Mishnayos are always considered more authoritative than Mishnayos, than Braises. So why are we discounting the Mishnah because of the Braisa? Shouldn't we discount the Braisa because of the Mishnah? Answers the Gemara. Mid the Shafka Rabbi Yossi LeBarzugei. Since we find that in our Mishnah we had Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon agreeing that an androgynous is considered a zochah. And now in the Braisa we find that Rabbi Yossi is stating his opinion by himself. Shmamina. So we see from here that it's not to be understood that there's Rabbi Yossi. There's a machloik is what Rabbi Yossi said. But rather the way to understand is that Hadabay, the Braisa represents that Rabbi Yossi changed his mind. Because as the Mefarshim explained, if there was just a machloikis, what is the opinion of the Braisa? So then the Braisa should have said that just like in the Mishnah we have the opinion of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, so too in the Braisa, we should have had the opinion of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. The fact that in the Braisa, besides that, as we explained throughout our shiur today, Rabbi Yossi states a new opinion, which he has not said previously, we find Rabbi Yossi by himself. And the fact that we find Rabbi Yossi by himself is an indication that Rabbi Yossi wasn't willing to stick to the opinion that he had with Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah, that androgynous is considered a zocher, rather barrier b'fnei atzmai. Shmuel Amar says that leis lebrais mekamis nisan. We follow the opinion of the Mishnah, and therefore that the Braisa is opinion, where Rabbi Yossi says barrier b'fnei atzmai, is the opinion that's discounted. Ask the Gemara, Adrabba, why is Shmuel so quick to accept the opinion of the Mishnah over the Braisa? We should ignore the opinion of the Mishnah and follow the opinion of the Braisa. For as the Gemara, the Shemin and Leil Shmuel, we've seen that Shmuel chayish lichido. Shmuel is always concerned that maybe for every separate opinion. So even though in the Brat Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi considers the androgynous as a full-fledged Zohar, but once we've learned the Braisa that indicates a new opinion, Rav Shmuel is always the man the Omer that is concerned for those opinions. And following that opinion, the halacha would be that we would not allow the androgynous wife to eat truma. And that would represent the chumrah. So shouldn't Shmuel be concerned that maybe that is the correct opinion? Answers the Gemara. Where do we find that Shmuel is concerned for opinions, for every opinion? When it's not at the expense of a Mishnah, what it's stated in the Mishnah. But here, if we're going to follow the way Rabbi Yossi states his opinion, the price will be that we won't be able to follow the opinion of the Mishnah. Under such circumstances, Shmuel just follows the opinion of the Mishnah and discounts what it says in the Braisa. Says the Gemara, but in a place where you'll have a machloikis in a Mishnah, or a machloikis between two Mishnayis, or presumably a machloikis between two Braises, there Shmuel will be machmer. Only in this case, where it's a Mishnah versus a Braisa, does Shmuel say we completely follow the opinion of the Mishnah. Says the Gemara, Amri Bei Rav Mishmei the Rav. They said in the Bei Rav, and we will discuss later in the Shir exactly what is meant by Amri Bei Rav, that the Halachas Krav Yossi Bandroginus, we follow the opinion of Yossi Bandrogus Barkovic. Each one of these subjects will be thoroughly analyzed in the Shir today. The Shmuel Amr, and Shmuel says we follow the opinion of Rav Yossi Bekoshi Bekiddush. Again, everything will be explained as we get deeper into the Shir Mitzvashem. Says the Gemara, androgynous, when Rav says the Halacha is like Rav Yossi by androgynous, Hadamaran, as Rav Yossi, as we've been learning throughout our Shir today, that the Halacha is that androgynous is considered a full-fledged Zohar. Hakova, what is meant in Hakova? The Tanan, the Mishnah Masech Tashviyas teaches us, a noitin, we're not allowed to plant a tree. Ve'mavrichim. Mavrichim means that we take one of the vines of a grapevine and we put it into the ground and we call it and we cover it with earth. And the purpose of doing this will ultimately, out of this vine, will grow a new grapevine. There's interesting machlokes rishonim. Is this a din only said by grapevines, or is this a din that's said by all types of trees? Ve'makivin. Hakava means to take a branch of one tree and put it into the next tree to, again, help it grow. The halach is that certainly we may not do any of these type of activities during the Shemitah year. But here teaches us the Mishnah Masech Tashviyas that we're not allowed to do it already in the before Shemitah. In the year before Shemitah, in the sixth year, we have to do it, according to the Tanna Kamma, within 30 days of Rosh Hashanah. And if you did it in a later time, less than 30 days, Yakar. And the reason is because if it's only going to be done within 30 days of the Shemitah year, according to this opinion, it's going to be take root only in the Shemitah year. And says the Michas Chinuch, based on the way Rashi explains our Gemara, that Hilchah Shviyas is somewhat different than Hilchah Shabbos. When we look at Hilchah Shabbos, says the Michas Chinuch, we look at the act. If you plant seeds on Shabbos, even though those seeds will not take root until, as we're learning now, later, and it'll be after Shabbos, you're still chayiv for the melacha of Zareya. Because, explains the Michas Chinuch, when it comes to Shabbos, the determining factor is the melacha. What did I do on Shabbos? And if I did something on Shabbos that I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos, I consider Mechal Shabbos. Whereas, Shemitah, he says, that there's a special din of the Shafsa Oretz. The Torah, by using the word v'shafsa aretz when it speaks about Shemitah, is teaching us that the earth has to be at rest during the year of Shemitah. And by teaching us that the earth has to be at rest during the Shemitah year, we're now allowed to plant something in the time before Shemitah if it's going to take root during Shemitah year. The Chazon Ish disagrees. And the Chazon Ish says that Shemitah, the pshat in our Gemara, is because there's a din of Tais v'Shvi'is. That Shemitah doesn't necessarily just begin on Rosh Hashanah of the Shemitah year. Shemitah already begins prior to Shemitah. And the pshat in our Gemara is that this, if you do it within the time frame that we're learning in our Gemara, that which the Mishnah now is identifying, that's considered that you violated Tais v'Shvi'is. Anything that's not done within 30 days, within 3 days, shuv ene kaletus. And the pashup shot in Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that you have 3 days. And as soon as 3 days, it's either 3 days, as long as what you did is before 3 days, before Rosh Hashanah, you're okay. Rabbi Yosef Shimon Omer, shtei shabosis. It's 2 weeks. Vam Rav Nachman Amar Abavua. L'divrei Omer shloishim. The first opinion that said, the Tanakam that said, you have to do it before 30 days, it's actually not 30 days. It's Sarach Shloishim V'Shloishim. It's really a total of 60 days. Because he says there's a din of Tais v'Shvi'is, and once 30 days before Shvi'is comes, you have to stop doing everything. And this is 30 days before those 30 days. And therefore, the mandam that says you have to make sure to do everything before 30 days is really going to need a total of 60 days. The Divrei Omer, according to Behuda who said it was 3 days shloisha, you're going to need a total tzarech shloisha v'shloishim. You're going to need a total of 33 days. The Divrei Omer shtei shabbosos, and according to the opinion that says 2 weeks, you're going to have tzarech shtei shabbosos u'shloishim, 2 weeks plus 30 days. And this is an example where Rav said that Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi in this question, and therefore Rav said that 2 weeks plus 30 days is the last time when you could do these various activities that we discussed. V'Shmuel Amar, we learned that Shmuel holds b'Kayshi v'Kiddush, we pass that by Kayshi v'Kiddush we pass in like the various opinions that we're going to learn. What is Kaishi? The halacha is like this. A woman, midaraisa, we have to emphasize that this is a din midaraisa. A woman's life, midaraisa, is a cycle of 7 days and 11 days. During the 7 days, a woman can become a nida. And a woman, midaraisa, who becomes a nida, needs to wait 7 days. And once the 7 days pass, as long as she stopped seeing dam, she could go to the mikveh. Then begins a cycle of 11 days. During those 11 days, if she sees dam for 3 consecutive days, she becomes a zava. And the halacha is that a zava requires zayin nekiyim. She has to wait 7 clean days, and only then could she go to the mikveh. Again, I have to emphasize that all these halachas are only midaraisa. Midrabanan, as the Gemara already says in Masechta Nida, b'nois yisrael hechmira atzmam, all Jewish women are machmer, shefilu rois taipas dam kechardel, even they see the slightest amount of dam, yishrois, they have to sit zayin nekiyim. If a woman is pregnant, so the halacha teaches us that a woman who is pregnant and has a baby, as we've discussed many times previously, the Torah speaks about Zois Torah Sayaledis. What is the halach of a woman who has a baby? And the Torah says that if she had a boy, she's Tameh no matter what for the first 7 days, and then she's Tor no matter what for the next 33 days. Again, these halachas are Midaraisa, not applicable Bezman Hazeh. And if she had a girl, everything doubles. If she's Tameh no matter what for the first 14 days, and she's Tor for the following 66 days. But there's a situation where a woman could have become a Zava and then had the baby. And now the question is, so now, as the Gemara Masechta Nida discusses quite extensively, the halacha will be that such a woman will have to, after she takes care of being a yoledes, she also has to take care of the meziva. She's going to have to wait zayin nikim, like any zava has to wait. The question that is addressed in our Gemara now is a woman who starts experiencing labor, and she also has dam. And the question is that going to be considered dam ziva, or is it can be considered connected to her labor? So says the Gemara. Kama yukusha, how many days before she actually has the baby can we say that we attribute the dam to the labor and not to the ziva? If she sees this dam 40 or 50 days before she actually has the baby, we attribute the dam to the baby and not to the ziva. What's pshat 40 or 50 days? So the Gemara Masechta Nida explains, by a healthy woman, we give her 40 days. By a non-healthy woman, we give her 50 days. Rav Yehuda Omer, Daya Chadosha. We only give her the month. And that is, if she saw in the ninth month that the dam, so then we'll attribute it to the baby. If she saw it before the ninth month, then we'll attribute it to the ziva. And it's very interesting. So it depends when in the ninth month she saw the stam, it will have a direct impact on what to consider her. If she saw dam, let's say, at the beginning of the month, of the ninth month, she won't have that many days to be able to attribute the dam to the baby. If she sees it later in the month, she'll have more days to be able to attribute the dam to the baby. So all the Rishonim explain that the halacha teaches us that the way it's expressed in Masechta Nida is shipur garam. The shofar that they used to blow to indicate that the new month began, that is when the new month begins, and it has direct impact on many halachic situations. Rav Yehuda Omer, Daya Chadasha, Rav Yosef Shimon Omer, and Kishim Yosef Mishtei Sabasas. The halacha is that you get 2 weeks. That if the dam, any dam that came within 2 weeks before the baby was actually born, then we can treat it, they consider it to the kishui, to the labor. Any dam that came prior to that is attributed to the ziva. And here, as the Gemara said earlier, is an example where Shmuel Paskin like Rabbi Yossi. The next example where Shmuel Paskin like Rabbi Yossi was Kiddush. What does that mean? The Tanan, HaMesachik Gafnei Gabot Vosu Shechaveroi. If somebody puts his grapevine over somebody else's grain, which of course creates a situation of klayim, Hareza Kiddush, he is the one that created klayim, v'chai b'chriyusoy, and he's responsible. And since he created klayim, and have a situation where the klayim is not bottled, as we discussed in the previous year, we'll have to burn this entire mixture, and the person who did this will be responsible. Divrei Remeya, that's the opinion of Remeya. Rav Yosef Shimon Omrim, Ein Adam Oysa Dovish Ein Shaloi. I don't have the ability to make somebody else's produce become usher. And of course, many Rishonim ask the obvious question, that here we're learning, Ein Adam Oysa Dovish Ein Shaloi. Ask Taisvis, what would happen if I went and I took some milk and put it into somebody else's meat pot and it's not bottled? Would anybody suggest that you're allowed to eat that product, that mixture, because it's not mine to make it usher using the concept of Ein Adam Oysa Dovish Ein Shaloi? Of course not. So how could we say over here that just because it's not my grain that I'm making prohibited, that's why it's not a problem? Why? So Taisus says that there's difference in different type of Isurim. Some Isurim are very, we look at the reality. The reality is, if we have Basa B'Cholov, Basa B'Cholov is Asur. even though it was not my intention, even though it's not my food, but that's the reality. If you have here a mixture, bas b'cholov may not be consumed. And some isurim, says Taisus, are dependent on machshava. I have that machshava to make it into klayim. Klayim, he says, is one of those isurim that depends on machshava. And since it's an isur that depends on machshava, if I don't have the ability to make somebody else's product usur, therefore the halacha is that it's not considered, that it's in the category of ein adam davar shayus shalai. The Rash asks questions on Taisus Teretz, and therefore the Rash has a different approach to this, to answer this question. The Rash says there is certainly a surim that are dependent on tam, that are dependent on taste. If we have bas b'cholov mixed together, and we have now a mixture of bas b'cholov, that's where the halacha says that that's also to be eaten. But there's certainly surim, says the Rash, that are not dependent on tam. And since they're not dependent on tam, the halacha is that by them, klayim being such an example, we say the concept of ein adam ma'aser davar she'eino shalai. It's an interesting question that the Paiskim, using this discussion, speak about the following shaila. The halacha is, if somebody takes a pat off the oven on Shabbos, so as long as he doesn't put it down, and as long as he intends to put it back on the oven, of course, with a situation where the fire is covered, the halacha is you're allowed to put it back on, again, with the conditions that it's still hot, and again, with the other conditions that we just mentioned. What would be the halacha if somebody comes to my home, takes the pat off the flame, doesn't have intention to put it back, puts it down on the counter or wherever, and I walk in and I say, I want this pat to be still on the oven. Do we apply here the concept of ein adam oisa davar she'eino shalai? Presumably, the halacha is that we should not be able to say, ein adam, we should say here, ein adam oisa davar she'eino shalai. It's not your pot, it's not your food, and you have no right to do something to my pot, to my food, that I don't agree to. But actually, this is a big machloikus hapoiskim. And what does the machloikus hapoiskim depend on? It's when somebody takes a pot off the oven on Shabbos. How is that to be looked? This is a fundamental chakira in understanding the din of chazara. How do we look at such what's happening here? Does the halacha say that as soon as you take a pot off the oven, it's usur? You're not allowed to put it back on. If you meet all the conditions that you didn't put it down and that you had intention to put it back, then the halacha lets you put it down. If that's the way the halacha views the situation, then the halacha ought to be that as soon as the pot is taken off, doesn't make a difference that it's not his pot. The moment the pot is taken off, it's usur. It only can be mutter if the proper machshava that we just identified is there. And here, where that machshava wasn't there, the pot may not be put back on the oven. If, on the other hand, the halacha is not that the moment that the pot is taken off does it become automatically usur to put it back on, only if you have the proper machshava. The way to look at it is that the pot could be put back on if you have a mind to put it back on. If you don't put it down, then we would maybe indeed be able to apply the concept of ein adam oisa davar she'eino shalai, and if it's not your pot and it's not your food, you have no right to do something to my food and my pot that's not yours. And this question, Derma discusses also in Simen Shin Tes Sif Dalet. We know one of the fundamental halachas of Hilchas Muksa is something known as a bosses. Bosses of davar asur. If I go and I put something on muksa, on a table or in a chair, that table, that chair become muksa, again, with its conditions, that it's only davar asur, and it becomes a davar asur, and you can't move that table, you can't move that chair. Says the Rama, that if I go and I put something muksa on somebody else's table, somebody else's chair, it doesn't become muksa. Because again, applying the concept that we just learned in our Gemara, I can't do that. My act doesn't have halachic significance. But says the Mishnah Berurah over there, in Sefkat Chav Zayin, that there is another factor to take into consideration. If I took something and I did it on behalf of somebody else, it's not mine, but I did it for somebody else. The Mishnah Berurah says that, let's say I saw that there's a candle dripping. So I took something and I put it there to catch the dripping of the candle. So I didn't do it on my own behalf. I did it on behalf of someone else. I did it on your behalf, but I did it for you. There we don't say, because I did it for your benefit, I don't say, Ein Adam Oysa Davish Ein Shaloi. Interesting discussion that the Sefer Mincha Shabbos discusses. What would be the halacha if a wife puts something and creates a Bosos L'Davar Aser? And we know, according to the halacha, everything in the home belongs to the husband. So let's say the wife put it in a place, and of course, even using the svara that the Mishnah Berurah just introduced, it wasn't that there was a definite benefit in putting it in that place. So perhaps we should say in that situation also, and it would not become a muksa. Ask the Gemara Bailey, Bandroginus. With Androgynous, we clearly had Rav passing the Grab Yossi, that Androgynous is considered a Zohar. Ask the Gemara, Androgynous Mali Yom Shmuel. What will Shmuel's opinion be regarding Androgynous? Toshma says, the Gemara Dom Shmuel of Anna, Leis Labrais Mekam Mesnissen, as we learned early in the Shir, that Shmuel holds that we discount, we don't count the Brisa because of the Mishnah, and the Mishnah clearly says that an androgynous, according to Rabbi Yossi, is considered a full-fledged zocker, and therefore Shmuel will hold like the Amri de Bei Rav, that we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah, that an androgynous is a zocher. Ask the Gemara, Harkova, regarding the issue of Harkova and Shemitah, ask the Gemara Mali on Shmuel, what will Shmuel hold regarding that situation? Toshma, Domle Shmueler of Ani, Tani Commander Omar, follow the opinion that says that you have to make sure to plant everything 33 days before Shemitah. And he does, in other words, he doesn't agree with Rav, who held like Reb Yossi, 2 weeks plus 30 days. He actually holds like Reb Yehuda, 3 days and 30 days. Ask the Gemara Koshi regarding the question of the Ziva and the woman in labor. Ask the Ramali Omar Rav, what will Rav hold? Like the Shmuel, as we learned in that question, Paskin, like Rabbi Yossi, what will Rav hold in that question? Says the Gemara Teiku, it's unresolved. Kiddush, regarding the question that we just discussed, where one put his grapes over somebody else's tefuah, it doesn't become klaim or not. Mali Omar Rav, what will Rav's opinion be? Will he agree with Shmuel or not? Amar Rav Yosi Toshma, Damar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Ein Alach Rav Yosi. That Rav does not agree with Rav Yosi by Kiddush. And in other words, he argues with Shmuel. Rav holds not that way. Amalei Sabaya quoted this. Said Rav Huna B'Shem Rav, says the Ramai Chaz of the Samchus Hai, why do you rely on what Rav Huna said in the name of Rav? Smaich al divrei, smaich aha. Maybe you should rely on what Rav Ada Amar Rav said, that locha is Krib Yosi. So according to Rav Ada Amar Rav, everybody, both Rav and Shmuel, agree with the opinion of Rav Yosi, of Ein Adam Oysa Dovash Ein Shaloi. Whereas according to Rav Huna, Rav disagrees with Shmuel and holds that it becomes Klayim, and the Gemara asks, why are you following this opinion? Why do you prefer Rav Ada's opinion over Rav Huna's opinion? Amri asked the Gemara, answers the Gemara, why did he prefer to take the opinion of Rav Huna versus the opinion of Ada? Amri be Rav Manu, Rav Huna. We've been learning this, as we mentioned, that the Gemara is going to get to this. The Gemara has been speaking about Amri Bei Rav. Says the Gemara, whenever we have in Shas a statement Amri Bei Rav, we mean Rav Huna. And in our Gemara, we've been going back to Amud Aleph, we've been trying to collate the Amri Bei Rav, the opinion of the Amri Bei Rav, what does Rav hold, what does Shmuel hold. And therefore, that means we're looking to see what Rav Huna held in these various subjects regarding Rav's opinion and Shmuel's opinion. And as we just learned, Rav Huna Amar ain halacha, that the halacha doesn't follow Rav Yossi, it follows the Tanakama, that it becomes klayim. Rav Yehuda Amar, we learned in the Mishnah, Rav Yehuda Amar Tumtum, if a Tumtum's area was open, was, as we learned, a Tumtum is an individual where his reproductive organs are covered. And the Mishnah said if it was uncovered and it's discovered that he's a Zachar, still he should not do Chalitza. And the reason he shouldn't do Chalitza is because he's a Saris. Amar Rav Asi, my Avalei Rav Yehuda, but ask Rav Ami, what would Rabbi Huda do? L'tumtum de Biri. There was a tumtum who lived in the city Biri, the Svua Pekersayu, that they put him on a certain type of a chair, V'ikra, and his area was revealed, and it turned out that he was a male, Violet Shivan Bun. And so we see that a tumtum can't have children, says the Gemara, Rabbi Huda Malach, Rabbi Huda says, Chaza Banama Ayinheim. Check. Are they really his children? When I say that the Tumtum can't have children is definitive, and since I said that it's definitive, nobody could argue. And the way Ramesh explains the Gemara is that the Gemara is teaching us that we learned in our previous Shurim, there are different simonim to identify who is a Saris. But our Gemara is teaching us that the tumtum shenikra, if an individual is born as a tumtum, and then that area gets opened up, and he's a zachar, even though he doesn't have any of the other simonim of a saris, he automatically becomes a saris. That's what Yehuda taught us. However, I did see that there are paiskim that want to suggest that even though Rabbi Yehuda identifies a tumtum shenikra as a saris, what he really means to say is he's in the category of a Sris Chama. And as we've been learning in our Shiurim, a Sris Chama can be healed. A Sris Adam cannot be healed. And if that's going to be actually the case, then this Tumtum maybe could have had children if he went through whatever it's taken care of. Says the Gemara, Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer, Tumtum, a Tumtum lo yachlitz, a Tumtum shenat do chalitza, for we need to be concerned. Shema yikareya. Maybe when that area opens up, we'll discover the nimtza sris chama. Maybe it'll be a sris chama. Ask the Gemara. So what you're assuming is that he certainly will be a male, but he's maybe going to be a sris chama. Who says there's going to be a male? Ask the Gemara. Ought to call the mikra zachahavi. If it's opened up, is it guaranteed that he's going to be a male? Says the Gemara hachkama. This is what it means. Shami Korea. The first thing is maybe when it's opened up for Nimtzim the Keva. It turns out that he's a female. And a female, of course, is not someone who does Chalitza. That Filu Nimtzim Zachar. And even if when it's opened up, it turns out that he's a Zachar. Shami Yimtzim Sris Chama, who also is not a candidate for, is not able to do Chalitza as we've been learning. So there's an interesting shayla that I saw the Cheshukei Chemed discusses. He says, do we have to do an operation to open up the area of the tumtum, which is covered, to be able to do a bris milah? In other words, a child is born, and he's born as a tumtum. Is there a halachic requirement to open up that area in order that if we discover that this child is a boy, we'll be able to do the bris milah on the eighth day? So the question is, And he says that this is a question in many areas of halacha. The halacha says that a child who's not well, we shouldn't do the bris milah on the eighth day. Are we obligated to do whatever we can in terms of tests and in terms of procedures to do to make the child able to have the bris on the eighth day? Or we look at what the situation is on the eighth day. And if he's fine, and we know he's a male, and he's healthy, we'll do the bris. And if not, not. So he says that there is no obligation to put the child through any pain or discomfort for this reason. And therefore, there is no obligation to open up the area of the tumtum to be able to determine if he's a tumtum or not to make the bris on the eighth day. So says the Gemara, we've learned two different opinions. We've learned the opinion of Yehuda, and we've learned the opinion of Yosef Yehuda. Yehuda says that a tumtum is certainly considered a sris. And Rabbi Yossi said, maybe it's a sris. What is the nafkamina? Amarava, one nafkamina is lifsa b'makam achim. If there are other boys besides the tumtum, and the other brothers besides the tumtum, and this tumtum went and did chalitza. So according to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, that the tumtum is certainly a saris, so his chalitza is a meaningless act. Since his chalitza is a meaningless act, the brothers can now do chalitza. If, however, it's only a suffix, if he's a saris or not, we can't just say that what he did is meaningless, because we can't be confident about that, because maybe he isn't a saris. And therefore, the other brothers are now in a dilemma. Can they do chalitza or not? And l'chomer, they should do chalitza. Or another nafkamina. Let's say there are no other brothers. So if, of course, a brother dies without children, and there are brothers who survived, and one brother, Nebuch, is a tumtum, and the other brothers are not, so of course we'll ask the other brothers to do the chalitza without any question. But in a case where he is the only surviving brother, this tumtum shenikra is the only surviving brother, if we say that he's certainly a saris, so it's no different than any other situation such as this, where somebody died and the only surviving brother he had is a saris. A saris is not a candidate for chalitza, and there's no chalitza in such a situation. If he's only a safik, so of course, if there are other brothers, he's not the brother that we should approach. But here there are no other brothers that we could approach. If there are no other brothers that we could approach, he's going to have to do chalitza l'chumra. Ask the Gemara, continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, Amar Rav Abba Achvad, Rav Yehuda bar Zavdi, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, androgynous, chayv alav skila. If somebody had relations with an androgynous, it's considered mishkav zachar. And not only is it considered mishkav zachar, shtei mekoivus. Whether they had relations in the place that he has his male organ, or whether they had relations with him in the place that he has his female organ, it's considered mishkav zachar. Meisvei asked the Gemara, Rebbe Elazar Omer, androgynous chayav alav skil bezachar. B'medvar mamurim bezachar shalai. It's only considered mishkav zachar on his male organ. Avam nakvishloi on his female organ. Potter answers the Gemara. Hudam kaitana. Rav says that it's considered mishkav zachar by both of them follows this tana. The tanya Rav Simoy Oima androgynous chayolav skimba b'shtei mekoymis. So he's following the opinion of Rav Simoy, and that's why he says it's considered mishkav zachar both on his male organ and his female organ. Asked the Gemara, my Talmud Rav Simoy, what is the basis for Rav Simoy's opinion? Says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Behem Duria Azbrali. Barab Duria explained this to me. The Pasuk says, Vezocha Laisishkav Mishkave Isha. Vezocha Shesh Beshnei Mishkavis. Where do you have a male that has the ability to have two organs to do Mishkav with? Have I Mizan androgynous? And the Torah is saying, Mishkavei, that there's Chayiv Mishkav Zachar by both of them. The Rabbanan, that Rebbe Elazar, who disagrees, says the Gemara, he holds that Afagav, this Beis Shnei Mishkavis, even though it's technically possible to do Mishkav Zachar with him in both of the places, but by the Torah saying, as Zachar, only on the place where he's a Zachar is the Mishkav Zachar, not in the place that he's in the Keva. Rabbanan asked the Gemara, if this entire pasuk is referring to androgynous, how do we know, according to Rebbe Elazar, that zocher greater than Allah? How we know that a regular zocher, a regular male, there's going to be a chiyuv for mishkav zocher? Says the Gemara, because the pasuk says v'es, and from the word es, we come to say that the din of mishkav zocher doesn't only apply by androgynous; it applies by every male. Continues the Gemara. If that's what we're learning from the word mishkavei, So ask the Gemara, Be'ish Shloi Kedakim Nolan. We've learned many times that if somebody has relations with a woman, that he's not allowed to have relations with her, when an erva, it's considered iser, whether it's kedarka or whether it's shloi kedarka. Where do we know this from? Answers the Gemara, it would have been enough from the word isha. It would have been adequate for the Torah to say, v'zocha lo tishkav mishkevei. Why does the Torah say mishkevei isha? Or could the Torah say, lo tishkav mishkevei zocher? The Torah adding the word isha comes to teach us that a woman having an improper relationship with a woman applies both kedarka and both shloi kedarka. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Shizbi, Amar Rav Chizdi. Loy lekal Amar Rav Elezer and Drog Nesochem Alya. Not regarding all halachas does Rabbi Elazar consider an androgynous or full-fledged zocher. Shemate oimakein, for if you're going to say that it's that an androgynous is considered a full-fledged male, but mekadoshim yekadosh. The halacha is that if you take an animal and you mekadosh it with kedushas haguf, then it has hegdish, and it can't lose that hegdish unless it becomes a balmum. And the halacha, if it's considered a zocher, so it should have kedushas haguf. So ask the Gemara, Manolan deloy kadosh. And from where do we know that there is no kedushas haguf on androgynous? Says the Gemara, the Tana Rabbanan. The halacha is that in order for us to eat a bird, a chicken, we know the way we eat it is with shechita. The way that they killed birds when they brought a carbon from a bird, the way they killed the bird in the base of Mikdash, is malika, taking the fingernail and piercing the back of the neck. Such an animal is an avela. If you took a bird that you wanted to eat, not in the base of Mikdash, not as a carbon, and killed it that way, that bird would be considered an avela. Now, the halacha is that somebody who eats a nevelas oif tahar, the nevel of a kosher bird, it has a special halacha. Normally, tumah is transmitted by touching, carrying the object that is tameh. Here, a bird that's nevela becomes tameh beis ablia when you swallow it. So now, this Mishnah that we're about to quote says that these birds that you did malika to, since they don't have a kedushas haguf, so they never are kegdish. They're only chulin. And chulin, as we said, if you perform malika on chulin, that bird will be a nevela. And if that bird will be a nevela, there'll be the special halacha of tumas oif nevela. Says the Gemara, the following birds are never able to get kedushas haguf. A nirba, a bird that a person had relations with, hamuksa, a bird that was designated to be used for avodah zarah, vaneved, a bird that was actually used for avodah zarah, and they don't become osur b'hanah, because the halacha is that bali chayim don't become osur b'hanah, but they can't become hegdish. Ve'esnan, a bird that was given to a zayna for payment, a mechir, a bird that was given in exchange for a dog, for tumtum, for androgynous. All of these birds, if they, even though you were magdish them and you did malik on them, they're considered a nevela and therefore matamim begodma beis abliya. Reb Elazar Omer, tumtum for androgynous ain't matamim begodma beis abliya, because they hold that it becomes a hegdish. And since they become hegdish, so that's why the malika is considered the way that they should be killed. Shai Reb Elazar Omer, kol makom shenema zocha in the keva, wherever the Torah says that you could bring a zocha in the keva, atemoytzi tumtum androgynous b'neim. A tumtum androgynous cannot be brought. Because a tumtum androgynous is not a zocha, not in the keva. So when the Torah says you should bring the carbon a zocha or of the keva, the Torah means you have to bring a zocha vadai or in the keva vadai. And a tumtum androgynous are not considered a zocha vadai or in the keva vadai. But, says Reb Elazar, when we speak about an oif, hoyav lo nema bo a zocha in the keva, we don't find that the Torah, when it speaks about birds, should say, do you bring a male bird or a female bird? That's why by birds, you have to mitzah and tumtum androgynous b'neim. But what do we see clearly? That even Reb Elazar, who's maybe lenient by a bird if it's a tumtum and androgynous, will not be lenient by an animal that's tumtum and androgynous. So we clearly see that even Rabbi Elazar does not consider an androgynous a full-fledged zocher. Because if he were to consider an androgynous as a full-fledged zocher, then the halach ought to be that we could bring a carbon behemoth from an androgynous. Aram Nachma Yitzchak, Afanana Mitanina, so do we learn. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Haklayim, an animal which is klayim, or a trefa, or yotzei dofen, that it wasn't born naturally, it was born with a cesarean. And tumtum v'adroigus, loy kadoshim v'loy mekachim. They can't be kodesh, and they can't be magdish. V'amishmu, what does this mean? Loy kadoshim v'tamura. Then not only if you were magdish such an animal, is the hegdish not effective, but even as we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem, Masechta Tamura, where the Gemara says that if you substitute one animal for another animal, where the Torah Kedoshah says, Lo yamireni, you should not do such a substitution. But the Torah says, Vim hama yamar oisai, v'ayuhu smarasa yukaydish, if the one were to perform such a substitution, both animals are kaydish, not if the animals are tumtum and androgynous, v'lo yamikachim, v'ayisa tmura. That if you have an animal that is ready kaydish, and you went and you substituted the Kedusha dat chal on the second animal. And if you went and you were magdish, says the Gemara, tumtum and androgynous, not, it's so not kaidish that if you now take another animal in its place, it's a meaningless act. We learned meaningless act. We learned that the Mishnah Belezer, Omer Chayav and Lav Kschil Zacha. Tanya Omer Rebbe, Shalachti Limitari Etzer Belezer and Shemua. When I went to learn Tayyar Belezer and Shemua, Chavrele Talmidim, the Talmidim in that yeshiva, circled me, surrounded me, katana goyim shabes bukya. They surrounded me like chickens, v'lenchoni lumayn, and they did not let me learn. El dava echav mishnah sayinu. Rabbi Elazar, I'm an dragon's chayav and love sekil kazacher. Only let me learn this halacha. So of course, this is a very difficult gemara to understand. Here we have an individual that Rebbe, they're coming to learn Torah, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, and they're pushing him away. They're not letting him learn Torah. So the Aruch HaNer explains this Gemara beautifully. He says that the Talmidim of Rabbi Elazar ben Arach did not know Rebbe. He came from a different yeshiva, and they were concerned that his intention in coming to learn by Rabbi Elazar ben Arach was not really honorable. It wasn't that he was coming to learn L'Shem Shemayim. Maybe he was coming just to tease them, to start up with them. So they were against that because they learned, as the pasuk says, Es Hashem Alekecha Tira, and the Gemara says, Es Hashem Alekecha LeRabbis Talmid Chachamim. Gemara Masechta Pesachim Daf Chav Hei Yom Beis. That we have an obligation to show cover for Talmid Chachamim, and therefore they were concerned that Rebbe doesn't know about this halacha, and Rebbe doesn't understand the great need and requirement there is to show cover Talmid Chachamim. So they taught him the halacha of Rebbe Elazar. That we learned earlier in our shir, that how did Rebbe Elazar come to his opinion? Because he learned the word S. They taught him that in our yeshiva, we learned the word S. And just like we learned the word S from Rebbe Elazar's limud, we also learned the word S of Es Hashem Alekecha Tira L'Rabbis Talmid Chachamim. So if you want to be part of our yeshiva, you have to take that lesson, the word S, learn the word S, learn the word S of Hashem al-Kecha Tira, l'Rabbis Talmid Chachamim, and then, and only then, can you become a Talmud in our yeshiva. Hadron l'cha'arul, hadron l'cha'arul, hadron l'cha'arul.